This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to the Playlist Podcast, a weekly discussion of films and TV. I'm your host, Charles Barf.
Do we call it a weekly discussion of films and TV anymore?
Bi-weekly? We're going to be bi-weekly. We'll be bi-weekly, I promise people. Okay. But yeah, I'm your host, Charles Barfield, who just interrupted me rudely, was Mike D'Angelo, but we're also joined by Brian Farver. Typically, I'd start with a silly question and a joke for the podcast, but I feel like telling jokes right now is a bit of a hot button issue in the world of movies after the Oscars. So I'm gonna leave that one alone.
What happened? Did something happen?
Are you kidding me?
Oh man.
Old man Farver.
Someone best slap him with some news.
Wait.
Oh, the slap. Are we talking about that show with Zachary Quinto?
Yep, that's exactly it.
I did see a tweet that were saying, like, man, NBC missed the boat on the subject matter for the slap. Or like, I think it was either that or it was like, if NBC needs a reboot, they've got it right now, you know? Yeah.
For sure.
But I assume, Brian, you're being facetious.
I am being, facetious is my middle name. Or actually, no, as we discussed, it is Lewis.
Yancey. Oh, yeah.
Yancey.
Yes. So for this week's episode, we got quite a bit to cover. First, we're going to talk about some of the recent news items, including the aforementioned Oscars and the slap heard around the world. We're not going to get too much into the nitty gritty of that, but we're going to, you know, it was the Oscars, which is like, quote unquote, the biggest night in TV biggest night in film. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some behind the scenes drama involving Tom Cruise and the Mission Impossible franchise. We're going to look at the new Joker from the Batman, as well as some other quick tidbits. And then we're going to transition to talk about our main topic for the week, which is Panic Room. No, you weren't just transported into DeLorean back in time to the early 2000s. Actually, this week marks the 20th anniversary of the David Fincher film, and it's an interesting time to talk about all that has changed over the past two decades since Panic Room was released, and how the 2002 thriller is viewed now, 20 years after its debut. Before we get to that discussion, gotta tell you, the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Be Real, The Fourth Wall, Deep Focus, The Discourse, Bingeworthy, and more. Basically, whatever Mike D'Angelo is doing this week.
Damn right. You call me Captain Podcast.
But if you want to find everything that Mike D'Angelo is doing this week, you can check our podcast app of choice, which is Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find favorite shows. Okay, boys, so we're gonna start with some news.
Binge worthy dropping this week, just an FYI.
well we'll get to that, because I think that's kind of going to be the main theme of the show is TV, oddly enough, when we talk about movies. But quite a bit of TV to talk about. But before we get to that, let's talk about the Oscars. First, we got to just mention, you can't talk about the Oscars without what happened with Will Smith and Chris Rock, if you live under a rock, no pun intended.
Oh, that's awesome joke.
It was completely unintended. I swear I'm better than that. Then you know that Will Smith got into a physical altercation with Chris Rock, and got into it, meaning walked up on stage, slapped him, and then walked off stage, then cursed at him twice on live TV. It was pretty epic. Lots of emotions. Some people were like, yay, protecting his family. Some people were like, ooh, slapping a presenter at the Oscars. What the hell? Some people are like, eh, it's fake. I don't believe it was fake. I'm not going to get into the conspiracy theory aspect of it, because I think that's ridiculous. But just quickly, do you guys have any quick thoughts about the slap? Is it done, you know? Less than 24 hours. Like, are we done talking about it yet?
Will Smith, about an hour ago, did finally issue like his own personal apology to Chris Rock and the Academy and everybody. So, I mean,
a little late, right?
It is, for sure.
It's not like he had a podium or anything he could have done it from.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of people were pulling at him, like publicists, and then he's got Denzel and Tyler Perry, and he's probably going, oh shit, what did I just do? And man,
I mean, there were whispers about, like, will they take away his Oscar? which would obviously they're not going to do that. That would be
they're not going to do it. They may suspend him from the academy or whatever it is.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
So I mean, it was fascinating television. I'll tell you that. I watched it live. And texted you about it, but you had already gone to bed because you didn't have to watch the Oscars for once.
Hell yeah.
And I was just like, holy crap. It was one of those things, like on live TV, it played a lot different than the video that circulated ultimately.
Yeah.
It was a very like edited, and they attempted to kind of black out some of it, and they did manage to do it, but you saw the slap. You saw the like confusion, and then you like heard it, they muted the audio and you just saw him mouthing the words,
yeah.
which are very clear.
Yeah. It always makes me laugh when you watch like NFL stuff or any sporting event or any live TV where there's a curse. And yeah. I mean, the F word, like we all know what that mouth looks like, right? Like, mm-hmm.
And he said it twice. So it was like, what did he say? Yeah. And then you're like,
It's funny because, well, it's not funny. This is actually kind of ridiculous. But when you watch the unedited version, the people in the audience had no clue. Like,
no, I thought it was a joke too at first.
Yeah. Yeah. People are like, oh, the slap. And so you hear the crowd. It's like a wave of emotions. You know, they're laughing at the slap because they think it's all put on. Then he goes back and then he says it once, you know, keep my wife's name out of your mouth, blah, blah, blah. And everybody's like, wait, what? And then he said it that second time and you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah. Lupita Nyong'o's reaction has been very much.
Yeah.
You know, joked about and looked at, but yeah, she was the eyes of the audience in that case.
Yeah. I don't think we want to spend too much time on this just because it really has no bearing on the film industry. It's more of a
fascinating television. Yeah.
Yeah. Brian, what do you think?
Oh yeah. It was absolutely fascinating. And I didn't see it live, but I did see the first thing was the unedited version. So that was pretty incredible. I guess to circle back to what you first said, like, is this going to die down? I think either A, it's going to die down quickly, or it absolutely will not. And it just will keep going for unnecessarily going for a while, because it is, at the end of the day, this is all very stupid. this is just a stupid thing that happened that, you know, there's so many different arguments that could come out of this. I will not deny, I agree with you, Mike. It is pretty darn incredible that it happened, but also like, I guess if I had my druthers, if I could write the script here, I would rather it just go away soon. I'll be curious about, you know, so they are filing charges or
no. So this again, if you're listening, a lot has been happening at a quick pace. So by the time this podcast is published, things could have changed. But as of this recording, Will Smith has publicly apologized in a written statement on Twitter, Instagram, or both. I forget. And basically he said, you know, I apologize. I let the emotions get the best of me, blah, blah, blah. Kind of a reworked version of his emotional speech. But this time he actually did apologize.
More coherent.
Yeah, it was more coherent, and he actually did apologize to Chris Rock, which I think was important. As far as the Academy goes, they are investigating. I know that the Board of Governors or whatever is investigating. They are discussing, like we were saying, discussing sanctions possibly, but nothing has been announced. They publicly do not condone violence, which is, as I texted Mike, very interesting thing to do after you let somebody get assaulted on TV and then give him an award. You know, that was an odd turn of events.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, is Will Smith going to get, you know, persona non grata in Hollywood? No, he's fine. He's, you know, going to make I Am Legend 2 and people are going to forget all about this. Will Chris Rock be fine? Yes. He's one of the funniest men on the planet. It was a bad joke.
Yes.
Content wise and actual joke wise, it just wasn't very funny. And you know, whatever.
Well,
what
I have a quick question. Like, I want to know what you guys think about what he said immediately after Will Smith swore at him. And when he said, like, because he kind of paused and then he said, like, well, that was the greatest night in television or whatever it was he said. do you guys think that he handled that like as best he could?
He's an MVP
in improv. Like, I don't know if like there was a better thing he could have said or done. No. I've watched that now numerous times to see if he is he shaking at that moment. Like, I don't know. I'd like to know your thoughts.
That's what
a moment.
What, No, oh, go ahead, Mike. I was going to say, that's what I think people thought it was fake for. It was because how well Chris Rock handled it.
Yeah.
Because that man stood there, took it, laughed it off, made a joke about, you know, it's just G.I. Jane, you know, like what the hell? Yeah. And then he continued on and gave Questlove a documentary award. Like, I don't think I would have had the wherewithal to take it like that. Not saying I'd fight Will Smith. I'd probably run off crying like a little baby, but like, you know, like props to Chris Rock for having the composure.
You could see there was a moment where he was considering letting loose on Will Smith.
And he could have too. That's
true.
This guy, not that Chris Rock could physically beat up Will Smith.
No, I meant verbally.
Like, yeah. Chris Rock's weapons are his words. And he was obviously holding back, even with the G.I. Jane joke, right? Like, it could have gotten really gross. And it didn't. And again, the restraint, man. The fact that he didn't press charges, I think, is also commendable. Only he could have. And I would have been totally fine with it because he was assaulted in front of millions of people. But the fact that he was just like, no, this is embarrassing for everybody involved. I just don't want to, you know, and I don't even think he's spoken publicly either.
He has not.
Will he turn it into a 45-minute special on HBO? Probably.
Oh, that's and more power to him. Special for sure.
Yeah, like he has the right to. But you know, personally, it was fun in the sense that it was like, whoa, shocking. But I'm just kind of over it already.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things. Like, I don't know that there's anything that's going to top the slap unless somebody plans it. You know,
right?
True.
So I don't think they can go bigger next year. As far as drama goes,
my favorite joke, I shared it with you guys on text, came from Adam Pally, the actor comedian. Did you guys read this? He said, and I quote, keep Paul Walker's name out of your effing mouth. Vin Diesel standing over my bloody body at next year's People's Choice Awards. That I think is kind of sums it up for me. Just, it's so ridiculous. But the Oscars are the Oscars, and it wasn't all the slap. They actually gave out some awards. The big award actually after the fact was Coda.
Sure.
That was the response I was expecting. You know, if I liked
Coda, come on. Fine. I know.
It was fine. Yeah. But was it the movie of the year? No.
Yeah.
Was it? Not. Let's all agree that the Oscars never picks the movie of the year.
Sometimes it gets it right. Parasite, I think, was the movie of the year.
Sure.
And Moonlight is incredible. Typically what happens is you argue about what the winner is because there were so many good movies that everybody has a legitimate argument. I don't think any of the pundits were like, Coda should win. There was no should win. Yeah, there was Coda will win. But nobody was like, dude, Coda deserves this. Yeah. Like Jane Campion's over there like, what? So I think that was kind of... It was about we say this term quite a bit, but it was a bit like a wet fart, right? It just kind of,
well, that's because of the silent clapping. Is that why you're thinking it was? It's more just,
No. It was more the just like of all the ways to end.
I mean, like that.
All the ways to end the Oscars, like a Coda win was just like, oh god.
Yeah, Coda is a perfectly fine movie, but. It is the four quadrant. It's the one that's most universal, and you can watch with your parents. And that's fine. That's the one that's going to win. Green Book.
Green Book is going to get brought up a lot. I felt like we would have seen a lot of Green Book memes last night if Will Smith didn't do what he did. I think those will come. Those comparisons to Green Book, to Traffic, to things like that, where these are movies that, you know, in hindsight, we're like, well, you know,
Shakespeare in Love.
I think that's more apt. Because I think Green Book and Traffic and movies like The Help, in hindsight, now we're looking at them like, those are pretty, you know, the politics, whatever, you know, the sociological aspects of the movie. Whereas this movie, I think, is just perfectly fine. It's just not all that great. Is it a artistic achievement better than Dune? No.
No.
Is it better shot and written and more emotional than Power of the Dog? Probably not. Is it just something that the family can gather around and watch on a Thanksgiving and everybody's going to be okay? Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe grandma will learn something. Yeah. So other than that, there were some snubs. Power of the Dog didn't win nearly as much as people were thinking. Dune won the Mad Max Awards. Basically every technical thing that it was up for.
Which I was happy to see it win all it could, you know.
Yeah,
I knew it was going to drop off towards the end of the night, which it did.
No big surprises as far as the actors go. Ariana DeBose won for West Side Story, which everybody's predicting. Will Smith won for King Richard. Everybody's predicting that. Chastain. I think the best actress category was kind of a crapshoot, but Chastain, I think, was a solid choice as far as that goes. She won the makeup and prosthetics award this year. You know, where it's like, you know, she changed, she went ugly, quote unquote. And yeah, that's her. You know, that kind of always gets that extra nod sometimes. But yeah, it was the awards themselves were just kind of like meh. Was it a big deal that they gave those awards out in the pre-show ceremony? That kind of sucked, considering that the Oscars were actually longer than last year. But
just imagine if they kept them.
I know. It's just, you know, they really got to figure out a way to do everything and make it. I think the problem is they're trying to make this. Well, okay. Actually, I'll pose this question to you guys, because another thing I wanted to talk about was the fan voted categories. because this is every year, maybe not every year. It seems like every year the Academy tries something to reinvigorate, you know, the Oscars and to attract those young eyeballs, those TikTok teens, you know. And this year they're like, we'll let them vote on Twitter. That's a good idea. And
they,
it wasn't.
Is it just me, or did they make it seem like this was an Oscar category and whoever won was going to get a statue?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody got a statue.
No,
they got some kudos. Glorified,
like, hey, look at what you did. Yay. Bye.
Don't tell the Snyder Cut fans that.
Oh. That's pretty much it, though.
Zack Snyder's Justice League is now an Oscar winning movie.
It's not.
You go on Twitter. You go on Twitter and telecast. You do that.
Show me the statue.
you gonna shake down Zack Snyder?
Yeah.
Because okay, so let's put some context for people who don't really know what we're talking about. This year, they decided to attract the teens by doing a Twitter voting for fan favorite categories, like fan favorite movie of 2021, which went to Army of the Dead because everybody loved that movie. Go listen to my talk about that movie. And then Zack Snyder's Justice League won the most cheer-worthy moment, not of 2021, not of the 2020s, not of 2000s, of film history.
Yeah. Yeah. Bullet Time was number 5. And number 1 was the Flash
running into the Speed Force.
Stop time, Daddy. Scene that I just fucking hated.
Dear Lord.
That is the greatest cheerworthy moment in all of cinema. I mean, that's a catastrophe.
How sad.
So my question to you guys is there anything that they can do to make the Oscars relatable to anybody who isn't either A, in the business, or B, obsessed with movies like us?
Nope.
It's hard. I mean, like, I look back over the past few years and, you know, how much they had to adapt last year, you know, due to COVID. And I guess, I don't know, was this year kind of still feeling some residual effects of that? I mean, I think back to the ceremonies we watched when we were growing up, these big grandiose affairs. And I miss that kind of, but I also recognize that as being very old school. So
I don't know. I was thinking about that too, actually, because I do remember being super excited for the Oscars because you would see, like, you know, this Hollywood legend standing next to this Hollywood legend talking about
exactly.
movies.
Exactly. Yes.
And I think what it is there are no more legends. We've broken down that barrier, right? Now.
So you're saying Liza Minnelli and Lady Gaga at the end didn't get you, or?
No,
old Al Pacino and Robert De Niro,
who didn't say a word. Well, so here's the thing, right? That's all well and good, but we don't have that barrier of entry anymore. Will Smith, I hate bringing it back to him, but he's just the most apt example, has like a YouTube channel, a huge social media following. His wife has a talk show. His kids are always talking and making music. We see a lot of Will Smith
talking and making music.
We see a lot of Will Smith in our lives. It's not special to see him at the Oscars, right?
I love your description of his kids.
I agree.
They're fine kids, I'm sure. But here's the, but you understand what I'm saying? Like, it's no longer special. The specialness isn't there.
And you know how I know they're losing? Because people like us are almost no longer interested.
Right.
Yeah.
They're barely hanging on with us, the huge film buffs who, you know, live and breathe for this stuff.
Right. And they've tried things, right? Like, so Dark Knight doesn't get a Best Picture nomination. So they go and they increase it to 10. And it doesn't really...
And then Spider-Man doesn't get nominated.
Yeah. And then you're like, okay. And so they're like, we'll do fan favorite. And then they wanted to do 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, they wanted to do the popular, best popular movie. And people lost their shit. That was actually going to be a category.
I think that would have been better than fan
would it Twitter have been? Voting. Because like Spider-Man No Way Home would have won.
Yes.
Or would it have? You know, what's a popular movie? You know, like... Anyway,
you're saying Army of the Dead would have won.
No, I'm just saying that it's stupid. Give out awards. Don't try to get the TikTok generation. Don't try to get anybody other than your bread and butter. Make it 4 hours long because these people are going to watch it anyway. And, you know, just do a stupid award show. Don't try to like reinvent the wheel every year because it's embarrassing.
I don't know. I'm kind of someone who is like, you have to figure out a way to incorporate the movies that actually matter to people. And if you're not going to acknowledge these Marvel movies and, you know, all these big blockbusters, you're going to lose interest because that's the stuff that has interest in money.
I agree. But at what point does it turn into
you don't let it dominate the show. You just, you give it one category like they were going to do, but people got pissed about it.
Right. So I think what you were going to say, Brian, is when does it become the MTV Awards?
Right.
And exactly. This was my joke with you guys in the when we would have
our
little
group chat. I
would
like to see them incorporate sliming if that's right. What we're going for.
No, like the fan favorite award felt just one step removed from Best Kiss, right?
Yeah.
Yes. It did. It felt like, okay, we're just going to get Best Duo. Yeah. Like, let's not give them ideas. But regardless, you see it in the ratings, because that's one of the last things I want to talk about with the Oscars, is the ratings were up 56%, which everybody's like, holy shit, this was huge. But right. It was up from a abysmal 2020.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, 2021. Where when you look at what happened in 20, what was it? Oh, geez, I'm so all over the place. The 2020 awards had 23.6 million viewers, which is still way more than what was this year. And the 2019 had 29.6. So when you look at it as a graph, it's a spike, but it's like a minor spike.
Yeah. And it's really probably after the slap.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's move on from the Oscars. I think we've exhausted that. Basically, we're not super enthused about it. The slap was the slap. You're going to hear everybody's opinion about it, and Coda won. So,
that's the Oscars in a nutshell.
That's the Oscars in a nutshell. We did it. We did it. let's talk about some other things. One of the other big, well, here, let's have a palate cleanser before we talk about more drama. Joker scene.
Yeah.
Matt Reeves waited all of 2 weeks? To release the deleted scene that everybody wanted to see, which was the Joker from the Batman, which was basically Silence of the Lambs meets Joker and Batman, which is fine, whatever. I'm going to just say that we're going to talk about this a little bit in spoilers. We're not going to ruin the Batman, but we're going to talk about this scene. So, Mike, what did you think of Barry Keoghan, I think, or Keegan or whatever?
Yep.
That guy, great actor. What do you think of his Joker then, now that we've seen a bit more of him?
I liked him a lot more in this scene than I did in the scene that kept him in.
Right.
If that makes sense.
It does.
He comes across a lot more Joker-like rather than someone doing the impression of someone doing an impression of the Joker, which is what it kind of felt like in the scene. I really hope, Brian, you've seen it by now and I'm not.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
So, Brian, what did you think? Was this the Joker that you were like, okay, this works?
No. no, because I do agree with Mike, actually, that this was better than what was in the movie. But, you know, going back to the movie itself, you know, I wasn't at all surprised that this character would show up in the theatrical release. I'm shocked that this scene, you know, leaked at all.
Didn't leak,
like you said. It didn't leak. They officially released
it. That's right. Yeah, what was it? All of 2 weeks? Is that what you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
might as well.
I don't know. I'm kind of I have many thoughts about this film, which I did enjoy, but as far as Joker is concerned, as far as what he did, I don't know. Even though I thought it was better than what was in the film, I'm not like, you know, dying to see another Batman film where he's going up against this guy.
I don't think we're gonna get it. And that's my kind of reaction to this, is I think this is a cool little tidbit, but I don't think it really matters in the scheme of things. I think, okay. I don't think Matt Reeves has any desire to do the Joker in the next movie. And I think what he was going to do is he was going to do this as a cool little nod. And then he probably had second thoughts because he's like, well, clearly people are going to be like, well, you're teasing a Joker movie, aren't you? You know? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so he's like, well, I'll just have the little tease, the minor tease. And then people are like, why didn't you give us more Joker? And so he released it. You know, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation,
pretty much.
But yes. I think what we're getting is just, you know, a really unique iteration of the Joker that exists in this universe that may or may not come back. And I'm okay with that.
Dark and unsettling. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's true. That is true.
I do like the inspiration being the Man Who Laughs. Is that the name of the movie? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm blanking. Mm-hmm. I don't have that in front of me.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But then when you see him and he's way more deformed, it kind of looks like it's a bit more, even though Reeves says it's not the acid, which is canonical, it does seem like there was a bit more of a deformity there. Mm-hmm.
And, or at least he's, you know, marred himself to the point of,
right.
Yeah.
So we're unsure about, you know, and I think that was actually pretty brave and smart to do, because he has to have that sort of desire to be like, or that devil on his shoulder saying, show the whole thing, you know, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Warner Brothers is like, we could make a toy out of this.
And of course, fanboys pieced every frame together to the point of making a clear shot.
Fanboys are going to fanboy. And you got to understand that. Yeah. I just, you know, I get why it was cut, just because it would have totally distracted from the movie. Mm-hmm. It would have veered way too much off the story. But, you know, I'm glad it's released. It's whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fine scene, but it ultimately was cut because it didn't contribute to the overall plot.
Yeah. A perfectly fine deleted scene that may or may not have any sort of ramifications. I'm super hoping that they don't just immediately go to the Joker for the next one. I don't need a Joker TV show.
Nope. Oh.
I think it was Rodrigo and I were kind of joking with each other that this was Matt Reeves basically saying, like, I'm going to give you Joker before you tell me to put Joaquin Phoenix in there. Mm-hmm. He's like,
yeah,
this is my Joker. No take backs. Let's move on.
Cool.
Let's talk about more drama, specifically Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible 7/ Mission Impossible 8. Can you, first off, we're up to 8 of these damn things. That's crazy, right?
Jesus, and they're Christ. So good.
God, they get better.
Yeah. Fallout's so good.
I can't wait till we can talk about
Mission Impossible. I know Impossible. You'd hate
do
it,
they?
Harbor, but yeah.
They do.
They do. They do.
They do.
They really do.
I don't know about this Quarry character, what he's doing.
I know you're an MI2 diehard. Yeah, nothing's been as good since.
That really is the best.
Not enough doves. so for those that didn't read these very long Hollywood Reporter behind the scenes dissection of what's going on in the Mission Impossible franchise, it's fascinating. It's about a week old now, but I think it's worth talking about, because Mission Impossible 7 was supposed to come out, what, 2021?
Yeah,
got pushed to 2022 because of COVID, all that. There was that whole tape of Tom Cruise yelling at his crew, cursing at them, saying like, we gotta do this movie, you guys can't act like assholes, all that stuff, right, about COVID. Mm-hmm. Then the film gets pushed again. They were going to do back-to-back filming, or actually like concurrent filming, it seems, where they do 7 and 8 at the same time, but that's got changed because of COVID, all this other stuff. And then there's this report that basically says that Tom Cruise is de facto holding Mission Impossible 7 hostage, so that he can get the budget he wants for Mission Impossible 8. And the way that him and Macquarie write these movies is basically on the fly.
Freeform, yeah.
And it's nuts.
It is pretty nuts. I agree.
So the big takeaways for this, and we can discuss them more. So basically what happened was Mission Impossible 7 had massive rewrites to the point where they added an entire basically third act scene on a submarine because they wrote it in Mission Impossible 8 and were like, okay, well, now we got to add it to 7. Basically, with COVID costs and everything, and Macquarie and Cruz writing scenes like days before they're supposed to happen, the production ballooned to $290 million for Mission Impossible 7. I think
what they wanted, ultimately, because they had this big submarine thing in 8, is they wanted to tee it up.
Yeah.
So they wanted to kind of, it wasn't going to be like this be-all, end-all submarine thing, which is going to come in 8. Spoilers, I guess. And yeah, so now we're here arguing about a submarine thing that
well, the movie wrapped and they're mm-hmm. like, just kidding, we're gonna add a submarine, and and Paramount's like, what? And then you had news that perhaps Cruz and Macquarie are both unvaxxed after Tom Cruise yelled at the crew, which is nuts.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about this. Yeah. Like, to be completely honest, outside of that, I'm completely on Tom Cruise's side.
Okay. And like, then there's
genuinely on Tom Cruise's side here.
And then there's this idea that Tom Cruise, this is kind of just an aside that I think is fascinating. He makes more money than Paramount does on these movies because he's one of the last stars that makes money on day one on these movies. Mm-hmm. So he gets a percentage of that box office gross that you guys see. He gets that money. That's nuts. And then this is the real kind of meat of the drama, is that he is holding it hostage, Mission Impossible 7, because he knows that once he releases Mission Impossible 7, they will handcuff his overspending on Mission Impossible 8 based on how 7 performs. And mm-hmm. he also has lawyers involved to fight the 45-day window, which is kind of the new de facto theatrical exclusivity window.
For Paramount, especially, and WB. Yeah.
It's just everybody's doing this 45-day. Disney even. I think Sony's the only one that's really kind of milking it because they don't have they don't have their own little mothership streaming service. Regardless, what do you guys think of this drama? We'll start with Brian, because obviously you're not a huge fan of Mission Impossible, but now that they pull back the curtain a little bit, what do you think?
Hey, really quick, I love Ghost Protocol. I think that is a masterpiece. Everything after that, whatever. My middle name is Yancey. But first of all, I think all of this is just terrifically entertaining. I mean, this, and it just totally speaks again to the fact that I love Tom Cruise as an actor, but I just, behind the scenes, he is just something else. what do I think about all this? I think the biggest takeaway here is that I just didn't know that, you know, these things are essentially being, like you said, kind of made up on the fly. And I don't know. I don't really know what to say about that I don't know. As entertaining as I find this, I'm also tremendously confused. I think that Tom Cruise, actually, maybe I won't, I'll stop right there and ask you guys, do you guys think Tom Cruise knows what he's doing, that he is actually a very smart person, or that he is
completely aware of what he's doing?
Oh yeah.
What does he do at the end of the day? Like, does he like just like go like, okay, not everybody
masturbate to pictures of himself?
I just have to wonder, does he just like go into a darkened room and then like turns the switch off and then just sits there for a while? Movies with Alan Thicke.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to presume I know what he does in his private life, because there have been plenty of documentaries and or biographies and rags that have tried to break that down. And it's probably a bigger mess than we have time for. That said, I think he's a very smart person, and he knows that if he can get Paramount to spend $300 million on a movie, knowing that he doesn't care how much Paramount makes on a movie, is brilliant. Because he's saying, like, I don't care how much money you guys spend, I'm making money off the box office, so I'm going to make these movies as big as they can be.
But also, you're paying for a Tom Cruise movie.
Yep.
He's going to make sure it's a Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm on his side, because he's going to fucking kill himself before he lets this movie be boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, here's the thing. You read this and you're like, Paramount, man, what are you doing? But then you realize this is kind of how it's been, because this dates back all the way to Rogue Nation, which was where, who directed Rogue Nation to, by the way?
McQuarrie, didn't he?
That was
Did
McQuarrie, wasn't it?
Yeah. Who, I just, well, maybe it was. Oh, yeah. Maybe it was the one before that. Maybe it was Ghost Protocol. But where there was a thing that even before McQuarrie got involved as a director, he was like ghostwriting like third act changes and stuff.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
And it just shows you that when they hired McQuarrie, they knew this is how him and Tom Cruise operate. So, yeah,
well, he's a fixer.
Yeah.
He's a fixer. Yes.
Yeah. He's like Tony Gilroy in that respect.
Exactly.
He's a hired gun who makes millions of dollars to make it seem like he was never there. And and so you give him the keys and you give Tom Cruise the keys and you know that this is how they work. Then that's just how it is, man. It's fascinating, though. I love these sort of behind the scenes things where nobody's getting hurt or nobody's, you know, there's no slaps or anything. This is just like, this is that old school Hollywood behind the scenes stuff that they used to like make movies about, you know, which I find fascinating.
Yeah. And Tom Cruise is a movie star and you're paying for a Tom Cruise movie. Let him make the Tom Cruise movie. You're going to spend a ton of money, but it's going to make a ton of money. And until it doesn't, just keep spending it. And he's going to keep, you know, doing crazier and crazier shit. Just do what he wants. That's what I'm saying. Tom Cruise. He's going to Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise is gonna Tom Cruise. And and with that, I want to
show him the money. Show him the money.
Yeah. And with that, I want to transition to our our main topic, which is Panic Room. And I know that seems like a clunky transition, but to me, this is kind of when we're looking at things to talk about this week. Of all the anniversaries that are here, you have Blade 2, which is a March anniversary. There are a number. The Godfather, obviously, it's 50th. I think
Blade 2.
Yes. Blade 2. I think the Panic Room thing is the most interesting for me, not in the sense that the movie itself is Panic Room and David Fincher and Jodie Foster and all that, Jared Leto, but the fact that in 20 years, we've gone from the fact that Panic Room, for those who don't know, directed by David Fincher, stars Jodie Foster, Jared Leto, Young Case too, and was his follow-up to Fight Club. And went on to make almost $200 million worldwide off of, I think it was like a $40, $45 million budget. And it just it reminded me that in 2022, just 20 years later, this movie would have been sent to Hulu or Netflix.
Absolutely.
This and would have made a $0 box office, which is fascinating to me. So first, let's talk about kind of our thoughts on Panic Room 20 years later. We'll start with Mike. What do you think of Panic Room, having spent 20 years with this movie in the pantheon of Fincher movies and all that?
Yeah, it grows on me more and more every time I watch it. I remember originally seeing it like back when it came out in the theaters and being like, oh, it was solid. It was fine. And not really thinking much of it, but like the more I see it, the more I like kind of respect it. It's not necessarily Seven or Zodiac where I'm like, those are masterpieces.
It's it's like bookended. Well, not by Seven,
right?
But Zodiac was the next one.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, up there. I think it's maybe in his top five. But it's still, you know, one of his better films. It's one of the more basic, straightforward thrillers of his. It's like he almost wanted to make this like Hitchcockian Die Hard movie where we've got, you know, our barefooted tank topped hero who was caught off guard by threatening invaders. And then there's a cat and mouse heist flick through Fincher's eyes. And there's, you know, a bit of Die Hard in there. And it's a super tight script that like anticipates the holes an audience is going to poke and then fills them in interesting ways as it goes along. And obviously the cast is amazing. Jodie Foster, who came in at last minute over Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, because Nicole Kidman, for those that don't know, she got injured. She re-aggravated something to the point where they were doing I believe they were doing tests with K-Stu and Nicole Kidman.
They were.
And
they were doing rehearsals.
Yeah. And then she re-aggravated an injury and they're like, oh shit, what are we gonna do? And you know, can do a lot worse than Jodie Foster in a pinch. That's for sure.
Yeah. She does great. She's an amazing lead. And even Jared Leto, who, I mean, he can turn in a great performance, but he can also turn in like one of the most fascinatingly bad performances you've ever seen. And I think he's at his best when he's playing like these grounded scumbags.
Yeah.
And in this one, he's definitely that. And Forrest Whitaker is awesome. Dwight Yoakam, it's just chews the scenery so much, and it's awesome. It's like those middling thrillers in lesser hands, you know, it would have been probably like something like that, but Fincher just makes it really sing with the tension and emotion he's able to wring out of it at the right moments.
Yeah. To me, it's a super like precise movie.
Yeah.
It's, if you look at Fincher's output on this like curve, he goes like, well, it's not much of a curve. It's more of a mountainous like climb. He just gets more and more precise with each movie.
Yeah,
and you started to see like Seven's rough by the standards, but you started to see him play with like CGI in weird ways in like Fight Club, and then in Panic Room he's just like totally like everything is like angles, and it's I think Fincher is coming into his own right around Panic Room, and then he just gets better. Brian, you said you were coming in hot when we discussed talking about this movie. I'm assuming that means you're not a huge fan of this.
I don't like this movie.
You're wrong.
There are things like you, first of all, you mentioned Yoakam, and that was the first person I thought of because, he,
Raul.
I almost want to say he's kind of brilliant in this film.
He's amazing.
You can say that.
I mean, I think about the scene that stands out to me is, are we spoiling? How much are we spoiling here?
It's been 20 years.
Yeah. Okay. that scene where I believe he is about to kill her ex-husband, is that right? Am I remembering this right? That's like a haunting sequence. I will say, I think this was the first movie that I ever really realized who Jared Leto was, because I hadn't seen Requiem for a Dream by this point.
I surely would hope not. Weren't you too young? Yeah.
Well, how old was I? I think I was 17
this time.
Okay.
I was exiting my teens.
Okay. So, all right. So maybe you were allowed to watch Requiem for.
I don't even know if I knew what it was, but I had seen Pi. Anyways. But there are.
I watched Pi before Requiem too. So
did
I,
you?
I feel you there. Yeah. That was a mind fuck of a movie, but that we'll get to that to another time.
Yeah. I mean, I think she has diabetes, and I think that's kind of
interesting. You were going to say diarrhea.
Oh man, that would have been a great movie. Oh my God, can you imagine? She has diarrhea the whole movie.
I just need her to get some Pepto-Bismol. She like throws the Pepto into there as the door is closing.
There's some cool stuff here. Like, yeah, actually, I like some of the parts with the doors closing and that one of the intruders is like right there, and there's some cool stuff. What do I hate? Okay, so you mentioned the CG. And yeah, in Fight Club, we have these giant sweeping shots of the camera going through the engine block of a car. And now we have the camera going through the handle of a coffee pot. Like,
well, no. To be fair, Fight Club also has a CG traveling through like trash cans and stuff.
True.
And then they've got like the IKEA background stuff. And he started to play with it, and then he just... I think it works.
Yeah. I think he was watching a lot of Hitchcock.
Yeah. You're making it seem like it was like Fast and Furious where you see like the NOS get injected, and it wasn't like that.
It was, I just felt it was unnecessary. Like, this could have been a much better movie if they'd had none of that shit at all. Like, just have it be like just a very simple film, recast some of the people. I don't necessarily think Forrest Whitaker was that terrible.
What?
Maybe get Leto out of there. I thought Boston was fine.
You're destroying this movie, Brian.
Kristen Stewart is great in this movie.
Yeah, she's really like good.
13 and she's awesome.
Yeah, she's all right. She's all right. But I don't
know. Not her finest moment is what you're saying?
It was a sort of movie where I think I...
Where was like, Jonathan Lipnicki?
good. I don't know. I think by this point, I was starting to maybe see some of the cracks in Fincher that wouldn't really be repaired until maybe Benjamin Button, because I just hate Zodiac so much.
All right, we're not gonna talk about it. Okay, Brian,
did you just say Benjamin Button is a good movie and Zodiac is a bad movie? What the hell, dude?
I think I did.
Oh, God.
So, okay.
Didn't we discuss this on the Fincher pod?
I was just about to say, if you want to hear our discussion about Fincher in more detail, specifically, about a year ago, we talked about our three favorite movies. I think Mike picked Seven. I picked Zodiac, and you picked The Game, correct, Brian?
Correct.
And The Game holds up. Definitely go watch The Game.
It's nowhere near the top. It's kind of unnecessary. What a dumb follow-up to Fight Club. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Oh, boy.
So the reason why I really wanted to talk about this movie is I knew we were going to disagree over the content, and I knew Brian was going to come in hot with some scalding hot takes. But what I got to go back to my original premise here, which is this is a movie that was made for under 50 million, debuted at 30 million in the opening weekend back in 2002, when movies really didn't do that all that often.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, we weren't even in a $100 million weekend yet, because Spider-Man was going to come out a few months later. And went on to make $200 million. Do you know what outgrossed The Scorpion King and Blade 2, both domestically and worldwide?
Deservedly so.
Yeah,
and also it was written by David Koepp, who wrote Mission Impossible.
Right. What I mean though is he
wrote The Trigger Effect, which is a terrible movie.
That's fair. But he also wrote Jurassic Park. So
okay, that's a different podcast. Yeah. Anyway, back to my idea here is that this is a movie that if you told Fincher or any director that here's the script for Panic Room, you get $50 million, and you're gonna they wouldn't get 50 million, they get probably closer to 20.
Yeah,
you get and you make it for Netflix. Which is a bummer, right? Like, this is where we are now. We were talking about before, you know, Tom Cruise demanding $290 million for Mission Impossible 7 and Paramount giving it to him, because everybody knows those are the only movies that make money nowadays. We were talking back in the Oscars. We were talking about how the movies that are relevant, quote unquote relevant, are Spider-Man and Avengers and Marvel stuff, because that's the only stuff that makes super huge money. And it wasn't that way. Like, Panic Room's like a top 20 grossing movie in 2002, mm-hmm. and it's just not anymore.
No, that kind of movie would not be in the top anything anymore. True. Which is sad. And I mean, those kind of movies.
Right. That's what I'm saying. In 20 years, are we going to talk about any of this? Is there a thriller on a Panic Room level that like seeped into the public consciousness that we'll talk about in 20 years from now? I don't know. You think question. We talk about Spider-Man movies too much nowadays? Wait till, you know, 20 years from now when we look back at 2022 and we're like, well, that's all we got to talk about.
Okay. I'm going to say really quick, okay. Howard Shore does an incredible job with the soundtrack, with the score. It is so haunting.
Fincher always has solid scores. Like, yes, it's forever. Like, all of his movies, you cannot, yeah. And also, now,
fun fact. Before we completely go away from Panic Room, so Jodie Foster takes the part from Nicole Kidman. Do you know who played her husband's girlfriend on the phone?
No.
Nicole Kidman.
No.
Nice.
What?
Yeah, there was around the time that she was promoting Ricardo's for the Oscars, they were talking about Panic Room, and she has nothing but nice things to say about like the situation. It doesn't seem like there were creative differences that were masked for like an injury or something, like sometimes happens. It sounds like it was just a bummer of a thing. Like, she wanted to star in it, couldn't, and is totally happy how it turned out. And that's awesome.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
But you know, this made me think also, because when we talk about box office now, there are Batman movies, and there are Spider-Man and Marvel movies, and that's about it. Everything else is either not getting released in theaters or is just underperforming. So do you guys see this turning around ever?
Is it just Blockbuster City in the theaters, and then, you know, everything else is relegated to streaming? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or just like, you know, those 2 week runs to qualify for Oscars, you know, like,
right.
We're talking about Coda. Like, Coda is a streaming
qualifications
movie.
Change.
that's the other thing too. Maybe they'll have, no, they can't do that. But, you know, Coda made like nothing in theaters.
Yeah.
Won Best Picture. That would have been a movie that probably would have done really well 20 years ago. Because there were, you know, your mom and dad were going to theaters. Now they're just not.
Yeah. They don't care.
Or because Mike D'Angelo makes binge-worthy podcasts and tells you to stay home and watch TV all the damn time.
I watch Moon Knight and you gotta watch Moon Knight.
No, but like some recent news, right? Searchlight, which used to be Fox Searchlight, which used to be the like one of those studios that
indie kind of,
not even indie, producing, like Shape of Water and stuff like that, like winning Oscars, is now sending movies to Hulu. It'll send 3 or 4 movies this summer straight to Hulu. Then you had,
it's like 8 a year, right, or something like that.
Yeah, but I'm saying just from Searchlight, I think Fox is sending like more. But then you have, or I'm sorry, 20th Century Studios. And then you have the new Alien movie, Fede Alvarez, but going straight to Hulu.
Yeah, I don't get that.
That is strange. That is strange.
So you're just seeing these are movies that would have been blockbusters. Maybe not, you know,
I mean, half you look a at billion. The last Alien movies and how much they made. So
right. I get it. Do you though?
I mean, like, I'd want to see it in the theater, but
right, that's what
obviously
I'm saying.
The largest, you know, a large audience doesn't.
There's this chasm now where there's movies that are $300 million, like Mission Impossible 7 and Spider-Man and Avengers. And then there are movies that are $25 million. And those go just straight to streaming and maybe a couple weeks in theaters. And it's just like,
and then every once in a while, you'll get like, you know, Lost City or Free Guy or whatever it is. And that'll do pretty well. And
but look what they had to do for
pretty well.
Look what they had to do for Lost City, though.
Yeah.
They had to put like, in the marketing, they're like all over Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, Channing Tatum, Sandra Bullock's
ass.
It's Sandra Bullock. And then let's spoil the Brad Pitt cameo just because we need asses in seats. Right. But I wish, you know, I haven't seen the movie, but the trailer, you're like, oh, well, that would have been cool to have like as a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they're like, we have to have asses in the seats. So we have to show everything.
Yeah, this is the age of let's just spoil it all, which sucks. That's why I avoid trailers like the plague nowadays.
Right. But it's just, it's weird that even something like a rom-com Romancing the Stone ripoff has to be packed with A-listers, has to have the most huge trailer relaunches and stuff just to compete with
crack Batman. 30 million.
Yeah. And Panic Room did it 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Panic Room is like an R-rated, unrepentant thriller that, sure, it had some big names, but also was just like, you know, we used to get those.
I think a David Fincher movie would warrant at least $30 million at the box office.
Really? How much did Mank make?
I mean, Mank was a totally different thing.
Was it, though?
Mank is not classic Fincher. Fincher was trying to do something else with Mank. And I
would
say on record, I don't like Mank.
Right, but Mank is the newest Fincher movie that went straight to Netflix.
Yes.
You know, before that he had Gone Girl, but Gone Girl was 2014.
That's because they were the only studio that would make it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Fincher can't make movies anymore that are theatrical releases.
And I think the studios were right.
Well, but his next one that he's working on now is going straight to Netflix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because now he has the relationship and they'll let him do whatever the hell he wants and he doesn't have to worry about it.
And 20 years ago, he could go off and make Panic Room and it would make $200 million and he wouldn't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
He could go make Zodiac, a almost three hour serial killer drama, not even a thriller, a drama, you know, Benjamin Button. That's a zigzag, you know, Social Network is like one of the best movies of the past, you know, 15 years. And that movie honestly would have been turned into a limited series on
Hulu. Oh, it would have been a limited series 1,000%.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Next season of Super Pumped is actually about Facebook.
Right.
So making Social Network 2, but a sequel.
On Super Pumped. So when I saw Panic Room, it just kind of like rang the alarm that, you know, we're not breaking new ground here. We're not telling you guys anything you haven't heard. It's just one of those things where you just, when you put it in perspective and you see that 20 years ago wasn't that long. It might seem that way for you Zoom and TikTokers out there, but for us, it doesn't seem like that long. No, and
that was kind of weird to look at Social Network and go 2010, that's 12 years. Oh,
Yeah. And it's just, it's a sad state of affairs and it's a bummer. And you can watch Panic Room on Hulu. can't see it in the theater, obviously, but
yes, and it's fantastic and worth your time.
It is. It is. Don't listen to Brian Farver. We do not endorse his comments. not at all. But, you know, he's obviously he has his right to disagree with us.
He will endorse the hell out of Mr. Boogity, but he won't endorse Panic Room. I'm just saying.
We could argue about that all day, but it would waste about as much time as a viewing of Panic Room.
Well, okay, let's put it into terms just real quick before we move on. Put it in terms for Brian. Your favorite movie of the past year was Ghostbusters.
Was that your number one?
No, actually, I'm going to say Spider-Man kind of edged it out.
Okay, but up there, right?
Yep.
That movie did not do well. Granted, pandemic, whatever, all those excuses. But they did everything they could to make Ghostbusters a thing in 2021.
I think it did well-ish for a pandemic, you know?
Well-ish,
did
it though? Yeah.
But what I mean is that not even a Ghostbusters anymore is like a guaranteed hit in theaters. And
I have a question about this. You're making me think about something here. So what is this going to do to the traditional movie theater? Is it going to turn into this, like, I don't even know how to describe what I have in my head right now, but like, if
Liam Neeson thrillers,
No, those are going straight to DVD. Physically, Liam Neeson can't even get a fucking theatrical
release.
Did you
just say straight to DVD?
Yeah, they go to DVD too. VOD, whatever. Physical media all the way. VHS, bring it back.
Well, I mean, I don't even know like what to say about the indie art houses, but like I don't even know about like the traditional chain, like a Marcus or an Alamo Drafthouse or something. But like, if what we're saying here is that, you know, the only sure things now are superhero films and films of that ilk. Are we just going to now, if theaters are to survive in some fashion, is it just going to be like this one screen building with like, I don't even know how to describe this right now. Like,
I think you're going to have two types of theaters.
I don't know.
Kind of like what you have now. I think you're going to have those indie art houses, which are going to be few and far between because they're not all going to survive. And they're going to be major metropolitan areas. And those people are still going to show the movies that, you know, cinephiles, quote unquote, are going to want to go see, but they're going to have to travel, you know, you have to drive like 45 minutes. And then the big AMCs and Regals are going to show these crap movies. And I say crap as a general, you know, thing, but basically this idea of these blockbusters, this popcorn stuff.
I mean, yeah, Spielberg's been talking about this for years. Like, he's been saying it's going to be event cinema and then everything else is streaming. And he's right.
And nobody believed it. And then the pandemic just exacerbated it because it gave all the studios the go-ahead to shorten windows and to send stuff to streaming first run and all that. But yeah, it's when you start looking at these, you know, celebrations of anniversaries, they're celebrations of great movies, but to me, they just always remind me of just like how much things have changed. And it's a sad state of affairs for people who are actually into all types of movies and not just the Justice Leagues and the Army of the Dead and those movies.
It's a different avenue. You're not going to get to experience it in the same way you would have, but like you look at a movie like Fresh that came up this year on Hulu, and it's a really delightful little thriller that you can pop on and watch at home and is very much worth your time. It's just, you're not going to be able to see it with a crowd, which it would have played pretty well with a crowd too.
Yeah. It's just a bummer, man. It's just a bummer. So you're just going to get you're just going to get the low budget horror, low micro budget movies that can turn a quick buck. And then you're going to get superhero stuff. And that's just
Scream 6 coming next year.
Yeah. So, okay. Before we say bye, I want to end with some recommendations because I think we can't just sit here and poo-poo everything without telling people what they should watch. So I'll start with Mike here. What should people watch since they're obviously not going to the theaters? I mean, they're going to see Spider-Man, Batman, and Morbius next week.
I'm going to recommend Spider-Man No Way Home. No, I even though I love that film, I've seen it many times now that my boys have gotten a hold of it and they want to watch it over and over again. So Yeah, I mean, my recommendations, I do recommend The Lost City. That is out there, and you know, it made $30 million, so it's doing okay. But I think it is worth your time. It is harkening back to that Romancing the Stone-ish kind of thing. It's got a little, you know, it's a better treasure hunt movie than the Uncharted movie that came out about a month ago, which I also saw in theaters because I love treasure hunt movies. But that one just kind of was garbage. And the thing is, they've churned out a lot of like bad ones in the past, however many years. The Tomb Raider remake that came out was absolute garbage. And you know, there have been other ones that I won't mention necessarily, but there's other stuff out there that's coming out on streaming as well this week. Moon Knight is coming out on Wednesday. I have seen the first four episodes. It is very good. If you ask me, it is not so good if you ask Rodrigo, our editor in chief. But let's be honest, every time we have a conversation about a Marvel show with Rodrigo, it's usually me going, "This is a really good show," and Rodrigo going, no, it's not. And yeah, so that's pretty much where I sit on Moon Knight. I think it's the best Disney Plus show that has come out yet. And
high praise.
Well, again, it's a treasure hunt movie. It's basically one of those adventure films with a superhero movie and a DID film and like a little cult horror thriller wrapped into it. So it's all those things. It's fun.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Brian, any recommendations for the folks out there?
Yeah, I'll say The Dropout. I have really been enjoying this more so than I thought I would. I remember reading some article about how these sorts of tech, you know, social network, these sort of shows or movies or projects or whatever, just don't work very well. I think this one works extremely well. That whole cast just rules.
And we've seen and watched all of those tech shows that you've mentioned over on Bingeworthy and had episodes for them over on Bingeworthy. So check those out. With the We Crashed, we interviewed the showrunners. With Super Pumped, we interviewed the showrunners. With the Dropout, we next week will be airing one for the finale where we interview the showrunner, Liz Merriweather. And all of these shows are worth your time, to be honest.
Yeah, you loved We Crash, didn't you?
We Crash is really good.
And they're all different.
Jared Leto and Anne Hathaway are phenomenal.
And they're awesome. Just all different. They're the same. We can paint a broad brush with this idea that these are kind of like the bubble bursting tech shows, you know, because we saw like all the, you know, the social
media.
Very
similar in kind of like their arc, but they have a different way of approaching it.
But they're all with fascinating leads. Like each CEO that's talked about in Super Pumped, We Crashed, and The Dropout are wildly different, but all have kind of the same flaws. It's fascinating.
Yes, they all worship at the altar of Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. But they're slightly evil in ways. Yes. It's crazy.
Or just delusional.
Yeah. Yeah. They drink their own Kool-Aid. Then you have to play off what Brian said. If I don't know if Brian, you've even seen this, but if you like The Dropout, HBO released The Inventor, which is a documentary about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, which is really good.
I started that. I didn't get very far, but I did start it. Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's kinda, The Dropout was on.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you can watch the documentary or you can watch the show or you can watch both. Sure. Who knows? But either way, that was a good documentary. The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley. Not my
record. I have the book too. The Bad Blood. That's a bit of a
they're still trying to make that with Jennifer Lawrence in the lead and Adam McKay
really
directing. I think they're still trying. I don't know, after a Dropout, maybe the Coles.
Yeah, I think they've covered that territory pretty well. And what's her name? Why am I blanking on it? The girl who plays Elizabeth Holmes,
Amanda Seyfried.
Amanda Seyfried is very, very good in it.
And she wasn't, speaking of late additions, it was supposed to be Kate McKinnon, if you remember.
Oh, that would have been a terrible casting choice.
Yeah, it was Kate McKinnon. I believe it was Kate McKinnon.
Glad they changed. Oh, man.
Oh, hey, yeah. Really quick pivot here. Speaking of Adam McKay, Mike, Winning Time. Oh,
what a show, right? Oh. I guess, let's flip to that. I recommend that. I recommend Our Flag Means Death. I recommend Minx. HBO Max has a lot of good shows.
So good.
And playing off HBO Max is my intro or my recommendation. I was talking with Mike offline about this. DMZ. DMZ is Rosario Dawson in a great role that she was made for. And Benjamin Bratt the revival of Benjamin Bratt. It had been a minute since I've seen him in something, and the man is chewing scenery in the show. So good. And it's only 4 episodes. Come on, people. Yeah,
that's 4
hour long episodes. Just watch it.
You can do it.
Yeah. So we started by talking movies. We're ending by talking TV. That's basically the way of the world in 2022. If you want to watch anything with, you know, major actors and all that, then that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. And HBO Max obviously has a ton of good stuff.
And we're not shilling just for HBO Max. Obviously, Moon Knight's Disney Plus. Dropouts Hulu, I believe.
It is.
We Crashed is Apple TV Plus. Coda is Apple. I mean, it's expensive to be a fan of TV nowadays.
Did we recommend Coda?
No, I'm just bringing it back to you know, the best picture of 2022. Well, of 2021, I suppose.
Yeah, Coda. I know. I was just messing around.
Yeah. So with that, we're going to say goodbye. Again, as we joked about in the beginning, the show is probably going to go bi-weekly, but we're going to, you know, talk about a lot more stuff. Not superheroes all the time. How we always still talk about superheroes, but, you know.
Charles, you just like went on a skippy skip mode. Did you hear that, Brian?
Max Headroom, indeed. Yes.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
You found out my secret. I'm a robot, guys.
Oh. Uh-huh.
I don't actually exist. I was programmed by Rodrigo to write news and talk shit.
And now you have no programming.
Nope. All right, guys. We'll talk soon. Thanks for joining me, and I guess watch Coda.
No, screw that. Actually, I got one more recommendation.
Hurry.
Yeah. Okay, Apple TV Plus. It's premiering this week. It's called Slow Horses. It
starts. Oh, Gary
Oldman.
Oh,
that's
it's
right.
So yes, good. It's like a British John Le Carre kind of thriller, and it's amazing. So
maybe one of the best trailers I've seen in a long time, because it's who's the star? Gary
Oldman.
Gary Oldman, yeah.
I am speaking with him tomorrow. We'll have him on next week, or actually the end of this week, I think.
Fucking name dropper over here.
Just saying.
Whatever. Talk to Commissioner Gordon, see if I can. But yeah, that's I watched the trailer for that. Not that I can offer anything other than that, but the trailer is really fucking good. And it looks like a lot of fun.
I've seen the whole thing. Cool. I don't know if I can say this.
Don't then.
A trailer for season 2 at the end. It's already shot. It looks so good.
Cool. All right, guys. Yeah, so watch Slow Horses on Apple TV Plus. Basically, just buy all the streaming services, give it all a whirl, see what happens. Good stuff.
Put the content in your mouth.
Yeah. All right, bye.